Spijak, we had a opening at Amravati Monastery in England, and he went all the way from Poland to Amravati in England by bus, and he had this huge box, and I think he had made 60 little Buddhas just to give away for free. Such a good heart.
Tad šis jaukais cilvēks reiz bija atceļojis no Polijas uz Amravati klosteri Anglijā, visu ceļu autobusā ar lielu kasti, kurā bija 60 maziņas Budas figūras, un viņš to darīja tikai tāpēc, lai tās izdāvātu par velti.
How long was the bus ride?
28 hours.
28 stundas brauc autobus.
You know, it was cheaper than the flight.
Yeah, I bet. Does anyone have any themes they'd like me to cover? Or should I just go into the darkness, as they say?
Vai ir kādas tēmas, kuras jūs gribētu, vai es apskatu, vai man doties iekšā tumsā, kā man teikt?
Any burning issues or themes, or you want a lottery number maybe or something? I can give you. In Thailand, they ask monks for lottery numbers.
There were themes, jautājumi, vai varbūt interesi par laimīgajiem loterijas skaitņiem. Taizamē mēdz cilvēki jautāt monkiem īstos skaitus.
It's true, yeah. They used to ask Ajahn Chah, how many monks do you have? He'd say, more than last year.
Cilvēki mēdz uzdot Aņģēnam šā tādu viltīgu jautājumu, cik tev ir mūku, un uz ko viņš atbildēja vairāk nekā pagājušajā gadā.
Into the dark then, huh? Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. Well, this will be easy to start. Yautayam sabhyam mukhyam. He just took me for a walk to the Estonian border. Almost.
Kolēģis man tikko aizved gandrīz līdz Igaunijas robežai.
He's much younger than me, so.
Viņš ir daudz jaunāks nekā es.
It gives me a good workout.
Es nevaru patrenēties.
Kā jūs pieņemat lēmumu kļūt par mūku? Okay. Why did I make the determination to become a monk? Lēmumu?
Decision.
What's determination?
Determination?
Yeah.
Apņēmība.
Apņēmība. Right, well, it's interesting. I've told this story 6 million times.
Ir interesanti. Es to esmu stāstījis jau 6 miljonus reižu.
And I've said it so often that I don't know if it's true anymore. Really, I think, did that really happen? And memory is very slippery because I've obviously painted a good story.
Un atmiņas ir ļoti slidena lieta, jo, acīm redzams, es esmu uzbūvējis ļoti skaistu stāstu.
Because I'm not going to give you a bad story. Kāda
jēga man stāstīt jums kaut kādu nepatīkamu stāstu.
So, my brother might say different.
Iespējams, mans brālis pastāstīt jums citādu stāstu.
Because certainly, when I've asked him about incidents with my mom and dad, it was like, were we in the same house?
Katrā ziņā, kad es viņam esmu prasījis par notikumiem, ap mūsu mammu un tēti, tad dzirdot viņa atbildes, man šķiet, vai mēs vispār esam dzīvojuši vienā mājā.
And that's the way of I think memory is that we first of all we interpret a situation particular to our experience, and then we remember it with our own biases.
Un tas ir tas, kas jāņem vērā attiecībā uz atmiņām. Vispirms jau mēs uztveram situāciju pa savam, un otrām kārtām mēs to tālāk atceramies un interpretējam saistībā ar savām nosliecēm.
So you have to remember that memory is very uncertain.
Tā kā jāatcerās, ka uz atmiņu nevajag paļauties.
So anyway, the way I remember it.
Katrā ziņā, tā kā es to atceros,
is that I suppose when I build my own story, I think of the themes that have lasted till now.
Kad es būvēju savu stāstu, es domāju par tām tēmām, kas ir turpinājušās līdz pat šim brīdim.
Because there's a lot of themes I wouldn't want to tell you about.
Jo ir arī daudz tēmu, par kurām es nevēlētos jums stāstīt.
So there's lots of foolishness in my life and I've done lots of dumb things like all of us have done in the
Un manā dzīvē ir daudz muļķību, kā jau katrs no mums mēdz sastrādāt jaunības laikā.
But why did I become a monk? So then I would say that as a child I had these strange experiences of deep silence, maybe I don't even know how often, not too often, maybe every other year, but they were and I'd get them when I woke up, if I can remember correctly. I'd get them when I woke up and they'd be so profound and beautiful, but I had no references and I don't think I talked to my parents. Somehow there was no way to talk about that. And they would fall, I just kind of carry on my life, but there were always this background search I had.
Bet ja man jāatbild uz jautājumu, kāpēc es kļuvu par mūku, tad tas šķiet aizsākas jau bērnībā, kad es diezgan nepārāk bieži, bet mēģinu izjust tādus ļoti dziļus, spēcīgus, iedvesmojošus miera brīžus. Tas, ja es pareizi atceros, notikas biežāk pamostoties. Tā sajūta bija tāda, ka it kā nekas nenotiek īpaši, bet sajūta ir vienkārši ļoti neaprakstāma. Un tāpēc var teikt, ka turpinājās kaut kādu meklējumu dzīves laikā.
So I'd forget about the experience, but it was in my subconscious such that all other experiences had this feeling of, well, that's not it, but what is it? So it was a very very disturbing kind of subconscious thing that kept me quite dissatisfied, actually.
Es faktiski biju jau aizmirs par šīm pieredzēm, bet tas bija palicis zemapziņā, neapzinātā līmenī, un katru reizi saskaroties ar kaut ko jaunu vai teorētiski patīkam, es neapzināt to salīdzināju ar šīm pieredzēm un sapratu, ka ne, tas nedod to garšu, tas nav tas, un tāpēc manī turpinājās meklējumi, nu, bet kas tad ir tas, kas varētu dot to?
And to cut a long story short, I ended up in India.
Un saīsinot ļoti garu stāstu, es nonācu Indijā.
And after traveling for 3 years and trying drugs and doing all that stuff.
Tas bija pēc triju gadu ilgā ceļojuma, kur es pabīju dažādās vietās, izmēģināt dažādas narkotikas un tā tālāk.
And then in India I read a book by Krishnamurti, who was a famous teacher in the 70s and 80s.
Un Indijā es izlasīju Krishnamurti grāmatu, kas bija slavens pazīstams skolotājs 70. 80. Gados.
And then that experience came back to me for a whole day.
Un tad šī agrīnā pieredze atgriezās pie manis atpakaļ uz veselu dienu.
And that was unspeakably profound, as you can imagine.
Un tas bija neaprakstāmi dziļi, kā jūs varētu iedomāties.
And it was the first time I was actually, you know, I was reading that kind of literature, so it was the first time I was really fully conscious of that way of being, I suppose.
Un tā bija pirmā reize, kad es lasīju tādu veidu literatūru, tā kā es faktiski pirmo reizi apzinājos, ko nozīmē tāds eksistences pastāvēšanas veids.
Next day, I read the book, nothing. You know the feeling.
Bet nākošajā dienā es pārlasīju grāmatu un nedabūju neko no tās sajūtas. Jūs droši vien esat pazīstami šādu situāciju.
But now my hunger was kind of really crystallized and I realized intuitively I knew I needed some kind of disciplined lifestyle because I was just I lived on my own in the mountains in India for that year.
Bet tagad mans izsaukums un meklējumi bija izkristalizējušies un es zināju, kurā virzienā man meklēt.
And at that time an American bhikkhu, American monk, got off the bus in the town of Elmora, near which I was living.
Un tajā laikā kāds amerikāņu bhikkhu, amerikāņu mūks, izkāpa no autobusa netālu no tās vietas, kur es dzīvoju.
And so I got friendly with him, and then he inspired me with the Buddhist teaching, and even more so he inspired me with this monastic life.
Un es pavadīju viņu kopā laiku, un viņš iedvesmoja man par budismu un par savu mūka dzīvesveidu.
So I was going to go with him to Calcutta and then to Thailand to ordain, because he had ordained in Sri Lanka, and he thought there'd be better meditation teachers in Thailand. This was 1972.
Tas bija 72. Gads, un es gatavojos doties kopā ar viņu, lai ordinātos Taizemē, jo viņš pats bija ordinējies Sri Lankā, bet viņš domāja, ka Taizemē tie skolotāji varētu būt labāki.
And he wanted to go to Nepal first. He went to Nepal. We were going to meet in Calcutta. He sent me a postcard. He disrobed, which was a bummer, as we say.
Tad viņš pats devās uz Nepālu un mums bija paredzēts satikties Kalkutā, bet tad viņš atsūtīja man pastkarti, kurā teica, ka viņš ir atbrīvojies no mūka drēviem un pamets mūka kārtu, kas bija liela vilšanās priekš manis.
So then I lost my nerve and then I just stayed, I had a little hut and then I got hepatitis and then I got in pretty bad shape. And then my grandfather died. He was living in Germany. And I went back to Germany for the funeral.
Un tad es iekšēji sašķuku. Es dzīvoju Būdiņā.
Būdiņā. That's true.
Yeah. Un saķēru hepatītu. Un tad uzzināju, ka mans vectēvs, kurš dzīvoja ASV, nomira tā kā... Sorry?
Vācijā.
Kur es teicu?
Vācijā.
Vācijā.
You want to call?
Okay. Un tad es nolēmu doties uz viņu bērēm.
And then what was really interesting now is I got involved with his trying to survive in Europe and I ended up in I worked in Switzerland for 6 months.
Un tad es centos izdzīvot Eiropā un strādāju Šveicē 6 mēnešus.
And when I look back at it, what really strikes me is that during those 6 months I managed to lose this aspiration to become a monk. I forgot about it. It really was, when I look back, very interesting.
Un atskatoties atpakaļ, man pašu pārsteidz, kā man izdevās pilnīgi pazaudēt šo vēlmu vai domu kļūt par mūku.
So then, what was that? It was about 25, and I got enough money and I thought I'd travel again, but I was feeling really, what are you doing with your life? I don't know. So I decided I'd go to Hamburg and try to get a boat and work across to South America. Crazy young guy.
Un tad es biju sapelnījis pietiekoši daudz naudas, lai varētu atkal sākt ceļot. Tad man bija 25 gadi. Un tad es nolēmu doties uz Hamburgu vai ar jūras transporta līdzekli vai okeāna transporta līdzekli nokļūt Dienvidu Amerikā.
I thought I'd work on the boats.
Jā, es varēju domāju, ka es strādāšu uz šiem kuģiem.
And when I got to the docks, it was so kind of degenerate there, so disappointing. I really felt lost. So here I was, I didn't know what I'm doing, where I'm going, and I ended up just going to the university because I'd been in university. So I just wandered around the university campus.
Un tad, nokļūstot šajos dokos, valdīja tāds pagrimuma iespējas, ka es sapratu, ka man īsti tur nav ko darīt, un tad es nolēmu, ka es došos uz universitāti, jo universitātē es jau biju pabijis, un tad tas man likās pietiekoši pieņemams variants.
And so I kind of wandered around the campus, I went to the student union building, and then I saw a travel bureau, student travel bureau, so I went into the travel bureau. It's true story.
Tad es klīdu apkārt pa studentu pilsētiņu, iegriežoties dažādās ēkās, kas tur bija, un viena no šīm ēkām bija ceļojuma birojas, kurā es devos iekšā.
So I walked in and I said, can you give me a list of flights? And she said, where to? I said, well, I don't know, wherever.
Un tad es devos iekšā un vaicāju, vai jūs varat iedot man lidojumu sarakstu, man vaicāju, uz kuriem tieši, un es teicu, es nezinu, vai jeb uz kurieni, un jā.
And I... She gave me a list of flights in the next few weeks. And I went down, from what I can remember, I looked down the list, and as soon as I saw Bangkok, I remembered that I wanted to ordain. Really extraordinary.
Man tika izsniegts lidojuma saraksts tuvākajām nedēļām, un es pārslīdēju ar acīm pāri visiem gala mērķiem, un tiklīdz es ieraudzīju kā mērķi Bangkok, tad es atcerējos par to, ka man bija doma ordinēties.
So I bought a ticket, went to say goodbye to my grandmother in Goslar. 2 weeks later I was in Bangkok, and 6 weeks later I was a novice in the brown robe.
Un tad, ja var cakot, es nopirku biļeti, divus atvadījos no vecmāmiņas, divas nedēļas vēlāk biju Bangkokā, un 6 nedēļas vēlāk jau biju kā jauniņais mūks.
And about 5 months later I'd met Ajahn Chah.
Un apmēram 5 mēnešus vēlāk es satiku Ajahn Chah.
So I think about that, and I think that must have come from a past life. It wasn't me. The only thing I can figure out.
Un kad es atskatos uz to, tad es domāju, ka tas noteikti nāk no iepriekšējām dzīvēm, jo no, es pats apzinātā veidā diez vai kaut kādīgi tā varētu būt izrīkojies.
So, that's my story. He'll give his story tomorrow. I'll give you your chance. I'd like to talk about memory, maybe. That would be helpful. Since we're there, right?
Jā, tad šajā sakarā es domāju, ka mēs varētu parunāt par atmiņu.
So, like, I think I'm coming from one of the interviews we had, that memory has both a narrative portion and quite often an emotional portion.
Un, ņemot vairāk neseno interviju, tad pavīdēja doma, ka atmiņām ir gan šī stāsta daļa, gan arī emocionālā daļa.
Sometimes it's just a narrative, but sometimes if you've had some disturbing experience, then you also get all the you get the body emotional feeling too.
Un varbūt tā, ka ir atmiņām tikai šī stāsta daļa, bet jau sevišķi gadījumos, kad mēs esam saskārušies ar kādu negatīvu pieredzi, tad atmiņām līdzināk ķermeniski izjūtams nepatīkams sajūtas.
And one of the important, I think, things of Buddhist practices of mindfulness is to be able to differentiate the storyline and the narrative and be able just to label the, like I've been saying, the mood of the mind or the memory. So just to be able to say this is a memory and not just run away with the storyline is one of the important practices of mindfulness.
Viena no apzinātības prakses svarīgajām lietām ir saprast, kur ir šī stāsta daļa, kur ir šī izjūtu daļa un spēt apzināties, kas ir kas.
And not necessarily just follow the storyline all the time.
Un arī nesakot līdzi šim stāstam, neturpināt to.
And I was just sharing with the group around that, with one of the groups, I had around the last 4 days of my mother's dying.
Un vienā no grupām es arī padalījos ar to, kas notika manas mātes dzīves pēdējās 4 dienās.
I think I was a bit inaccurate in the group discussion, but the four days before she died, and I didn't know my mother was going to die, she really went downhill, and I had to give her some medical assistance, say, which proved to cause her quite a lot of pain in the next 2 days, and I wasn't aware of that.
Un tad ceturtajā dienā pirms manas mātes nāves viņas stāvoklis strauji pasliktinājās, un es, protams, nezināju, ka viņa tik drīz mirs, un es viņai sniedzu zinām medicīnisku palīdzekli, kas viņai sagādāja papildus sāpes, ko es neapzinājos.
And I only realized that and rectified it by maybe 36 hours before she died.
Un to es apzinājos un izsicināju tikai apmēram 36 stundas pirms viņas nāves.
So after she died, there was the strong memory of her dying, but there was also this awful feeling, awful. You imagine how bad it was that I had hurt my mom.
Un, protams, pēc nāves bija arī pat šī nepatīkamā sajūta, ka viņa nomira, bet vēl jau vairāk šī ārkārtīgi briesmīgā sajūta, ka es viņai nodarījis papildus sāpes.
And I have a very strong tendency to be very self-critical.
Un man ir ļoti spēcīga tendence būt pašu kritizējošam.
So that combination was very toxic.
Un šī kombinācija bija ļoti toksiska.
And it came up so, the memory came up so strong, and my mind just trying to, you fool, how could you do that?
Un atmiņas bija tik spēcīgas, un parādījās ar faktiski spēcīgu domu, tu idiots, kā tu to varēji izdarīt.
And fortunately, I have enough background training that I just kept saying, no, this is just memory. Memory feels this way.
Par laimi man bija pietiekoši daudz treniņa, lai es varētu katru reizi parādoties šīm atmiņām pateikt, ne tās ir tikai atmiņas un tām ir šāda sajūta.
And it would come up every half hour, just kept coming up. It was so strong. And I'd just say, no, memory feels this way. And I'd stay in the body, not go to the narrative.
Un šīs spēcīgās atmiņas uzjundījās ik pēc pusstundas, un es sev piespiedu nesakot šai stāstu līnijai un atgriezties pie sajūtas apzināšanās.
I think if I hadn't done that, I would have gone crazy. Because it was so painful.
Un es domāju, ja es nebūtu šādi prasmīgi rīkojies, tad es būtu sajūtas prātā, jo tā sajūta bija ārkārtīgi sāpīga.
And the people I talked to, it was interesting, I was phoning some monks and so on, and because I was in the midst of it, they would say, how are you doing? And I would say, oh, I made this really dumb mistake. And the monks that listened and say, wow, that must be difficult, they're very helpful. But the monks that said, oh, but you were so good for 9 years, don't worry about it, they were not helpful at all. That was very interesting to watch, actually, what was helpful.
Un šajā laikā es sazvanījos ar vairākiem mūkiem un bija interesanti novērot, ka tie mūki, kas noklausoties to, cik es muļķīgi biju rīkojies, tie mūki, kas teica, nu, droši vien tagad sajūties ļoti nelāgi, ka viņu refleksija, pārdomas, sacīktais bija daudz noderīgāks un vērtīgāks un atbalstošāks nekā to mūku sacīktais, kuri teica, ka jā, jā, labi, bet tu esi 9 gadus tik daudz viņas labā darīs nepārdzīvo.
And I knew that, you didn't know how to tell me, but in the moment, I first of all had to experience this terrible, terrible feeling. I had to go through that, there was no choice. And staying with it, and staying with it, and staying with it, eventually that memory eased. But it was very intense. But if I hadn't stayed with it, you know, it would still be somewhere in my subconscious that would be kind of hounding me, I think.
Un es to, protams, zināju, bet to bija, cīm redzot, nepieciešams izdzīvot, ka man ir jāpaliek visu laiku ar šo sajūtu, kamēr tā parādās un tā jāizdzīvoja. Jo, ja es nebūtu to izdarījis, tad tā būtu aizgājusi kaut kur zemapziņā un vajājusi man no turienes.
So, that's just a simple example. I keep kind of referring to this idea of being fully conscious of something. So, I had to actually be fully conscious of this very, very difficult feeling, but not run with the narrative and the storyline with the sense of self.
Un tas ir tas, ko es nereti atgādinu arī šeit, ka ir pilnīgi jāapzinās tā sajūta, ko mēs pieredzam, bet nav jāsakot tai domu straumei vai stāstam, kas iet kopā ar šiem sajūtām.
So to just be able to kind of have the wisdom say, memory feels this way, is the beginning of freedom within that memory.
Un ja mums ir pietiekoši daudz gudrības pateikt, ka atmiņā ir šāda sajūta, tad tas tajā brīdī ļauj mums uzsākt ceļu uz brīvību no šīm atmiņām.
Now that's a very extreme case, but our perceptions are built on memory.
Un minētais bija tāds ļoti galējs gadījums, bet kopumā mūsu uztvere ir balstīta uz mūsu atmiņu.
And again, as I was saying earlier, we need perceptions to make judgments about how we live in the world.
Un kā es teicu iepriekš, mums ir nepieciešama veids, kā mēs uztveram, lai mēs varētu spriest, kā dzīvot pasaulē.
So for instance, let's say if I'm careless with perceptions, let's say a monk comes late to the meditation, I look at him and I feel critical. So the perception of criticism comes up, you're a late monk.
Teiksim, gadījums. Es redzu, ka kāds mūks ierodas uz mācībām ar nokavēšanos un parādās kritizējoša doma un uztvere, to esi mūks, kas kavē.
Now, and then I carry, and we've all had this, I'm sure, I carried around, I see him 2 hours later, he's still the late monk. He's not a human being with feelings, he's the late monk.
Un tad es redzu šo pašu mūku 2 stundas vēlāk, un man jau projām ir saglabājies šis iedotais apzīmējums, to esi mūks, kas kavē.
So I'm talking to my memory. You know, I'm not talking to the human being anymore.
Un faktiski es tajā brīdī runāju ar savu atmiņu, savām atmiņām, nevis ar konkrēto cilvēku, kas ir manā priekšā.
If I let go of that perception, or I'm aware of it, and I just allow the person to come to me, that's different. I can still talk about being late, but I allow the human being to present himself, that means I have to let go of my biases.
Bet ja es atbrīvojos no tā veida, kā es viņu reizi esmu uztvēris un ļauju vienkārši pieņemt un uztvērt viņu tādā brīdī, kāds viņš ir. Tobrīd, tad es esmu brīvs no saviem prāta radītajiem ceļiem, kas ir iet iepriekš.
So now, like, I don't know about Latvia, now in North America, there's a huge bias against Muslims. Bias, there's a huge bias against Muslim women, but Muslims in general.
Es nezinu, kā ir Latvijā, bet Ziemeļamerikā šobrīd ir visnotaļ liela aizsprieduma pret musulmaņiem.
So there's a lot of press about terrorists and there are terrorists and war. So any woman that wears a veil now, the perception is quite easily to perceive her as an oppressed woman.
Un ir visnotaļ daudz ziņu un rakstu masu saziņas līdzekļos par to, ka šis te islāms saistās ar terorismu, karu un tā tālāk. Un faktiski katra sieviete, kurā ir šis apmetnes plīvars paranģa, viņi tiek uzskatīti par apspiestu.
That's a possibility, and I had that. I remember going to I needed to get some cloth or something, going to a shop, and there was a Muslim woman, not with a veil, but with a, it's called burqa? Anyway, with a head covering. And I remember my perception was, oh, she's probably really oppressed. And she was so buoyant. She was so delightful. It was just my mind interpreting from all the kind of propaganda I had received. And I didn't even know that conditioning was there.
Es devos uz kādu audumu veikalu iepirkt man nepieciešamo lietu. Un tur satiku kādu sievieti, kas bija tērta šajā galvas sagā. Un es pamanīju, ka manī rodas doma, ka nu, viņi noteikti ir apspiesti, viņi izcieši kaut kādu veidu apspiestību. Kaut gan patiesībā tā sieviete bija ļoti pacelētā noskaņojumā un ļoti starojoša. Un tādējādi es sapratu, cik ļoti man ir ietekmējuši šie aizspriedumi, ko es esmu dzirdējis un kā tie darbojas no manas zemapziņas.
Like perceptions of racism.
Un līdzīgi arī ar rasismu uztver.
What I like the one is that monks shouldn't have an iPad. They see this outfit and think 2000-year-old robe and he's got an iPad. Not right. Weird.
Man ir aizspriedumi par to, ka mūkiem ir iPad. Ja tas kaut kā neiet kopā ar šo 2000 gadu veco ietērpu un mūsdienu no tehnoloģisko ierīci.
So people see me using a chainsaw at the monastery. They think I have to use an axe all the time. Give me a break.
Cilvēki, kas redz mani klostera teritorijā turot rokā motorzāļu, domā, ka tas nav īsti vārdā man pienākt uzturēt rokā cirvi.
Or they're amazed that I laugh. I thought, you monks laugh?
Vai arī cilvēki ir pārsteigti, ka es smējos. Kā jūs mūku vispār arī smējaties?
Yeah, you kind of... And I do wonder when I walk through Frankfurt Airport what people are thinking. You can imagine.
Un es tiešām ar interesi staigājot pa Frankfurtas lidos domāju, no ko gan cilvēki šobrīd domā vai iztēlojas.
Nick Scott and I were walking across Kurzem in 1997 maybe, 98.
97. vai 98. gadā mēs kopā ar Niku Skotu kopīgi gājām Kurzemes ārēs.
What?
So we're walking and we're carrying backpacks and sleeping out.
Mēs staigājām, mums bija mugursomas gulēšanai ārā.
And so I was in my robes. Nick looks like Tolstoy.
Es biju savās mūka drānās un Niks izskatījās pēc Tolstoy.
And we were by a river and we saw a path going up, a kind of quite a very good path. So we went up this path and we emerged into a parking lot. And there was a poor woman there.
Mēs gājām gar upi un gar to vedā taciņa augšup, kas aizveda līdz autostāvvietai, kurā atradās kāda namaks ieviet.
And can you imagine now, she's just getting out of her car.
Un jūs varat iedomāties, viņa tikko kāp no mašīnas.
And here comes Tolstoy and his guy and a guy in a dress.
Un te viņas acu priekšā parādās Tolstojs un Tolstoja pavadonis kleitā.
And she says, ak šausmas. She says, oh my God, or something. And I say, nu kāpēc tā? It's one of my favorites. So I said, yeah, what's the problem? That's perception. So back to the Dharma. Again, if that would have been a Thai person, she would have fallen to her knees and bowed.
Ja tur būtu taizemieks sievieti un būtu kritus, tad jūs un pakalmīsies.
So, perceptions. So, come on. Sober up. So the perceptions that the Buddha suggested that we make conscious, or he suggested we introduce perceptions which are skillful.
Un Buddha ieteica, lai mēs radam tādu uztveres veidu, kas ir prasmīgs.
And as I was saying, like, and you've read Ajahn Chah's teaching, Ajahn Chah would constantly bring up the perception, it's uncertain.
Un ja jūs esat lasījuši vai dzirdējuši Ajahn Chah mācības, tad viņš ieteica ik pa laikam uzcelt augšā šo uztveri, viss ir nepastāvīgs.
And to actually like, or it's change, usually the Pali word is anicca, which means change, but he would always put that twist on it, it's uncertain.
Un šis ordinālais Pali vārds anicca nozīmē pārmaiņas, bet Jones Chato pavērst nedaudz citādāk, nenoteiktība.
And to actually do that, you know, you have to be mindful enough to bring a perception into consciousness, and that particular perception gives you some objectivity around the experience.
Bet lai mēs spētu šādu uztveri ieviest savā prātā, mums ir tas jādara pietiekoši apzināti, lai mēs varētu uztvert notiekošo objektīvi.
This is called in the Pali anicca saññā, where you're asked to bring up the perception of change or uncertainty as a way of interpreting life.
Un Pali valodā to sauc par anicca saññā, proti apzināts veids, kā uztvert lietas kā nepastāvīgas vai nenoteiktas vai mainīgas, respektīvi darīt to apzināti.
So when you read Buddha's doctrine, we're always talking about change, that life is impermanent. Now, if you just take a doctrinal position, life is impermanent, that's not really reflective. It's just taking a Buddhist belief. But if you take you make that perception active, it's much more difficult. It's a kind of practice you have to do.
Ja mēs lasām modernas mācības, tad mēs bieži vien sastopamies ar šo nepastāvības jēdzienu un pieminēšanu, bet ja mēs to paturam tikai intelektuālā līmenī, tas ir tikai viedoklis kārtējais, kas mums ir, kas neko daudz ikdienā mūsu uztver neietekmē. Bet ja mēs apzināti paceļam augšā vai ieviešam šo izpratni savā uztverē, tad tā jau kļūst par praksi, kas reāli ietekmē to, kā mēs uztveram pasauli.
And it's really important, like the moods that you have, like you might feel, you get up in the morning and just feel, oh, I don't want to go to work, it's, you know, like it's November, it's dark, it's raining, and that mood can feel eternal, it can feel, oh, it's going to always be like this. Then you bring up the perception, it's uncertain, all of a sudden you're more aware, you're more conscious, you're more objective.
Tajos gadījumos, kad mēs pamostamies no rīta ar domu, ka es neiebu iet uz darbu vai ar rudens diena ir tumšs, augsts un nepatīkams un tā tālāk. Bet mēs spējam arī saprast un uzcelt augšā šo uztveri, ka tas ir nenoteikts, nepastāvīgs. Tad tas palīdz mums daudz objektīvāk, reālāk apzināties, kas notiek.
Because what is reliable is the awareness of change.
Jo tas, uz ko var paļauties, ir pārmaiņu apzināšanos.
So like inspiration is a delightful type of mood, and you feel inspired, and if you attach to that, there's a feeling that I'll always be inspired. But if you say inspiration feels this way, it's uncertain. You have a certain coolness in the heart.
Piemēram, gadījumā ar iedvesmu, kas ir ļoti patīkams, pacelājošs prāta stāvoklis. Ja mēs pieķeramies tai, tad mēs varam domāt, ka es vienmēr tā jutīšos, un es negribu šķirties no šīs stāvokļa, bet ja mēs apzināmies, ka lūk, tāda ir sajūta, kad ir iedvesma, un tas ir nenoteikts stāvoklis, tas mainīsies, tad mēs savā sirdī redzam zinām esmu sajūtu.
And another perception that the texts recommend we introduce into our lives is the perception of anatta, or the way you might phrase that is not me, not mine.
Un vēl viens jēdziens vai izpratni, ko Buda ieteica mums ieviest savā dzīvē, ir anatta, ja kā to varētu pārfrāzēt, ne es un ne mans.
That's a bit more difficult because the understanding of anatta is quite subtle, but just to do that, let's say I feel annoyed at someone and I say not me, not mine, that it's designed, that perception is designed to give you the same kind of distance, the same kind of perspective.
Un šis ir nedaudz grūtāk, jo pats šis jēdziens ir smalkāks, bet teiksim, kad mēs sadusmojamies uz kādu, un tad pieejam šajā situācijā izjūtu mēs, ne mans, tad tas palīdz radīt distanci.
So this is different, like believing in Buddhist philosophy is different than actually applying a perception which the Buddha is recommending we introduce into our daily life.
Ticēt budisma mācībai doktrīnai atšķirās no tā, ka mēs reāli pielietojam praksē, ieviešam savā dzīvē to, ko Buda mācī.
So I would suggest you try that. Just constantly noticing the changing nature of moods and thoughts in the body.
Un es to jums ļoti iesaku pamēģināt, novērot, kā mainās noskaņojums, garas stāvoklis, sajūtas ķermenī.
Or like for instance, like this use of perception is quite important to understand in in terms of right understanding and right thought and Noble Eightfold Path.
Un tāpat arī šī uztveres lieta ir visnotaļ svarīga, lai saprastu četras savās patiesības 18 ceļu.
So when I suggest to you, when we did these body meditations, I suggest perceive the body in awareness.
Kad mēs veicām ķermeņa apzināšanos, un es jums teicu, uztveriet ķermeni apziņā.
I'm not making some kind of philosophical statement that awareness is kind of vast and eternal and the body is some sort of functioning, and I'm not making a philosophical statement. It's just a way of perceiving, and that way of perceiving for me liberates, opens the mind to non-attachment.
Tajā brīdī es nestādu priekšā kādu filosofisku ideju vai apgalvojumu. Es iesaku to, kā uztvers veidu.
So like in terms of perception, again, the perception, the glass is half empty, the glass is half full. This is a different way, it's true, it's a different way of interpreting.
Vēl cits veids, kā mēs varam paraudzīties un interpretēt, to ir tas pats piemērs ar glāzi, kas ir līdz pusai tukša vai līdz pusai pilna.
I'm not succeeding in my meditation is a perception.
Uztver ir arī, ka man nesokas meditācijā.
And then, not me, not mine, just a thought.
Un tad tikai šī doma, ne es, ne mans.
So there's a sense of always finding the space of awareness, which is where you find freedom, and the non-grasping of these changing conditions.
Un tādējādi mēs varam nonākt līdz šim apzināšanās stāvoklim, kurā mēs nepieķeramies mainīgajām lietām.
So I think we'll name this talk the Akšausmas talk.
Es domāju, ka mēs varētu nosaukt šo stāstu par Akšausmas stāsts.
So I'll leave it there. And maybe then. So you remember your lines? Sadhu, 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 anumodami.
Damayam dhammakathaya sadhu karam dadamase.
Sadhu, 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 anumodami.
Very good. Let's finish with chanting.
Arahaṃ sammā sambuddho bhagavā buddhaṃ bhagavantaṃ abhivādemi savākato bhagavatā dhammo dhammaṃ namassāmi Supatipanno va bhagavato savaka sangho sangham namami